He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
And he can see no reasons, because there are no reasons. What reason do you need to be sure?
I don't like Mondays either, Boomtown Rats. Hi, everybody. Geraldo back in New York, along with Gnome Layden. Mr. Layden, how are you?
I'm doing just good, thank you.
We're going to have the latest, we will, on the hero cop shot in the face in Queens on Saturday night. It is, to me, ironic that there are no big civil rights marches planned to protest the near-fatal attack on the cop. How's that? How's that happen? You have to walk a mile in the other guy's shoes before you demonstrate how displeased you are with what they do. Those cops have a tough time. They deal with the worst among us. I'm going to get to the cop. I want to start, though, with that Garland, Texas shootout. You had two apparent jihadis, American jihadis, shot and killed, attacking the hateful Pam Geller cartoon show mocking the Prophet Muhammad down there. So all their wishes came true. The jihadis got their wish. They're on the way to the great beyond. Meanwhile, Geller got her wish. She provoked the violence that she probably secretly was praying for. She wraps her hatred in the language of constitutional rights. I mean, they really deserve each other. Let me just give you a quick history reminder. Remember back 1977, Skokie, Illinois, a city with a very large Jewish population, including many Holocaust survivors? A judge back then forced the city to allow a march through the Jewish town of Skokie, a lot of Holocaust survivors. They forced the city to allow the American Nazis to parade the obnoxious credo. Doesn't get more hateful than that. And the ACLU defended the Nazis. Their march was an exercise in free speech. And like the Nazis in Skokie, Illinois, the obnoxious Pamela Geller certainly has the right under our Constitution to insult and defame the Prophet Muhammad. The First Amendment exists to defend the hateful, the unpopular ideas. Easy to defend the loving and popular ideas. The First Amendment, though, exists to defend the hateful and the unpopular ideas. So at this Geller-sponsored event, I mean, this is the woman, remind us, Noma, the MTA cartoons, what did they say?
You know, the ads, she's had many ads over the years on subways and buses. The latest one she wanted to have on was Hamas killing Jews as part of her organization. And the MTA turned down the ad. So she went to court and said, hey, it's my constitutional right to get these ads up there. She won. A judge sided with her. So the MTA last week said, that's it. No more political advertising on enemy MTA
buses.
That's
how they beat it. All right, so that no more.
Yeah.
Ads, any stripe.
No, just $1 million in advertising on an average year. So they say it's not even a lot of money they'll be losing out by not having this political ads.
So this Geller-sponsored event. Now, you, I don't know where you stand on it, folks. I mean, you let me know at 866 Geraldo, but what? You want to take Dave right now? All right, what's up, Dave?
Yes, Geraldo, great to be your first caller.
All right, well, tell me in a hurry. I got a lot to say.
Okay, let me say, as a Muslim, I'm totally in agreement with Pam Geller. You know, the overwhelming majority of us, we're not concerned about cartoons and caricatures. First of all, we don't know what the Prophet Muhammad looked like when he was walking this earth. So this is another excuse for the satanic state known as ISIS, you know, to promulgate, you know, their warfare.
Well, let me ask you this, Dave. Don't you agree that having just come from Baltimore, that it is sometimes fairly predictable when you seek to provoke someone, you can provoke someone if you want to. Don't you think that this Geller-sponsored event in Garland, Texas last night was designed not to exercise free speech, but to provoke violence, exactly the violence that occurred?
I think that, unfortunately, you know...
isn't it crying fire in a crowded theater?
To a degree, it is. You know, but as a Muslim American, again...
All right, well, you're a good constitutionalist, Dave. I think she's obnoxious. I do. Last night, the organizers, Pam Geller, awarded a $10,000 prize for the creepiest cartoon depiction of the prophet, who, of course, is sacred to Muslims, and some of them, some small percentage, are more incendiary than our caller Dave. Now, I don't know, in fairness, whether she intended to provoke violence, but she did. The two Muslim gunmen, American Muslims, I guess they have a Somali, did they have a Somali background? They were trying to get to Somalia. I know they were turned down at some point. The news is just coming out as the background checks. They're based, I guess, in Phoenix, Arizona. They traveled to Garland, Texas, to perpetrate this violence. They attacked the Geller event. They shot and wounded a security officer. But guess what? The two gunmen, when they're shot and killed by overwhelming security there in Texas, they were lying in wait for exactly this kind of violent response. They had like an ambush set up there. So the jihadis got exactly what they deserved. You don't mess with Texas. Still, I have to say, Pamela Geller makes me sick. She makes me sick. She gives me the creeps. She is absolutely everything this city does not need. And kudos to the MTA for taking the million-dollar hit so we don't have to be reminded constantly of that kind of hatred. It just it irks me. Just like all those, the American Nazis, all of them. I mean, no one's confronted those hate groups more than I have on TV. But it just is something that so creepy to me. John in Rockland calling 866-RALDO. What's up, John?
Yeah, hey, how you doing?
Good, man.
Listen, I totally disagree with you there, Geraldo. I believe that all it was...
Well, you disagree that Pam Geller makes me sick? That's my constitutional right.
I love her. I think that what she's doing is saying, listen, we have a First Amendment right here in this country. We're not going to be intimidated by terrorists across this world and expressing ourselves. And we're not going to take...
You never in your life have been provoked by anything that no one ever went out of their way to insult you?
Did anybody go out of their way to insult me?
Yeah, in your life.
Yeah, I've been insulted.
And so what'd they say? I mean, we don't know anything about you. Just give me one sentence. What'd they call you? What'd they say?
So I'm short. So I was called all kinds of, short jokes. But it didn't stop me. I became a Marine. I went on to become an NYPD detective. I retired. It didn't stop me. So what? Big deal.
So you're a detective now?
I'm retired. I retired after 9/11.
So what do you think? All right, let's get something on firmer ground here. What do you think about this? The hero New York cop shot in the face by this dirtbag thug, violent criminal, career criminal Saturday night.
Listen, you got this new mayor in here. He set the tone already in the beginning. And now you got people thinking that they can do whatever they want. We got the stop and frisk, the broken window. Look, under Giuliani and then with Bloomberg, we had a safe city, and now you're going to see it's only going to get worse.
Sitting behind the wheel of his patrol car, the officer was questioning this ex-con. His record again, Layden?
9 priors, including a murder charge from 2000 after a robbery. He shot into a car. So this guy has a rap sheet that's a mile long. How he was back out on the streets is always the question we ask after these horrible crimes.
Demetrius Blackwell, his name. He was being questioned by the cop about a suspected weapon. He was fiddling with something in his waistband. The perp then whips out the handgun, shoots Officer Brian Moore in the face, point-blank range. The officer, last I heard him before I came to work, clinging to life in a medically induced coma. You got anything later than
that? I don't have much more than that. I can just tell you yesterday, they, for a moment, were going to bring in a chaplain for last rites and, in fact, brought family members back from vacation. That's how dire it was yesterday. But we heard things that improved just a little bit overnight. So we don't have the latest from this morning. We haven't heard much from the hospital room.
So I come to you from Baltimore. Now I am back in New York. Freddie Gray Jr. did not deserve to die in police custody. But before any cop can be judged, we have to remember that they have to deal with the worst among us. They have to deal with the Demetrius Blackwells of the life, of our life, of our world. And before we judge what any cop does, this is what juries do. That's why so many cops get acquitted. We have to walk a mile in their shoes. They don't live in an environment like the rest of us. They live the thin blue line between civilization and savagery. between order and disorder, between the law abiding and the law breaking, between the hard working and the glommers, the greedy. So now you got this guy's facing two counts of first degree attempted murder, Demetrius Blackwell is, after firing at these cops. And we'll continue to monitor Officer Brian Moore's condition. Really is, it is a situation. And remember, everybody now predicting a long, hot summer. You see that? You see that survey, that the Wall Street Journal, NBC survey, 96% believe this is going to be a rough, racially speaking, a rough summer. And I just think we've got to get a conversation going immediately. We have to start. I mean, it's almost like we have to bring back the holding hands and we're all in this together, 1960s. Because where we're headed, I mean, Baltimore, you should see Baltimore. Baltimore's not like New York. I mean, did you see Craig's piece?
I did not.
Saturday night? 35,000 burned out derelict buildings in the city of Baltimore. 35,000 in a city of just over 600,000.
That's unbelievable.
35,000. You should see them. And it's like nothing like New York. It's nothing. It's much more like the core of Detroit or that one neighborhood in East Cleveland there where the guy had the 11 bodies in the walls and all that. That those places still exist is like shocking. That people still live that way. There's so much to talk about. I love being back home. Let's have a conversation today here at 77 WABC.
Geraldo, the truth behind the story for New York. Live, local, on it. 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
It is 24 minutes after 10 o'clock on this Monday, the 4th of May. Gorgeous weekend. Unfortunately, I only got to spend a couple of hours of it back here in New York. Baltimore was quite an experience. It's a city that you should know has, as far as I can figure, about 10 times the murder rate of New York. And I'll tell you something else, Noam, that was even more shocking to me. As I sat in the hotel waiting to go out to do my show Saturday night, two doctors from Johns Hopkins came up to me and they said, "Do you know that from that neighborhood where you're broadcasting from and here where you're sitting now in this hotel, there's a 20-year difference in life expectancy?"
Wow.
I mean, doesn't that say it all to you?
It's outrageous.
About, you know, the absolute wackiness of this grotesque two worlds. And the most amazing thing, the basic society there, and I'm going to get back to New York and to your calls. The basic society there, the economic structure, is based on narcotics trade. That's the main employer. And the main businesses are the Bloods and the Crips and a couple of others that are, the names are more complicated. And I saw them, I talked to them. You know, they don't like the anarchy, brings much too much police attention. That's why they were trying to quell the violence. I mean, what kind of life is that? You ever watch Wired?
Yeah.
Wired is real. Wired is real. I mean, that is a sorry place. We came up with a couple of ideas, and I want to get to them as the show progresses. But right now, urgently, we're talking about the police officer who's shot in the face, Officer Brian Moore, and we'll continue to update you on his condition. If anybody knows anything specifically, please call us. If anyone knows the cop, please call us. Our last information is that he's in critical condition. I spoke to three cops in person at the coffee shop this morning, and they told me that he's in a medically induced coma. Shot in the face by Demetrius Blackwell. Nine priors, including attempted murder. Shot him right in the face, point blank range, for no reason as far as we can tell, other than the fact that the officer was asking him what he was doing, fiddling around with something in his waistband. The something turned out to be the weapon. We obviously wait with trepidation on the updates from the officer. We give all hope and love and condolences to his family, and we're confident the doctors will strive mightily to return him to health. We pray for that. Our buddy Ray in Rikers, what's up, brother?
Hey, brother, how are you? How are you holding up?
What's doing?
Listen, your idea of having the feds look at whenever the police officer are involved in some sort of homicide, it's a reasonable idea. But conversely, on our end, then if you willfully and you deliberately assault an officer, my idea is you get 5 years flat. And in the case of Blackwell, you deliberately and maliciously kill an officer, you get the death penalty, period, period.
I think they still provide for that in New York. I haven't checked lately. They haven't used the death penalty in a long time in New York, but I think it's still on the books if you kill a cop.
Yeah, but my point is, you can't just sit around and appeal and this and that. Look, listen, this is anarchy in the streets, brother. Wait till.
Oh, let me tell you something, Ray. Let me tell you, that's a good point that you raise. I talked to some cops on Saturday. This is after the arrests on Friday of the six officers. There was jubilation in West Baltimore for a time. The jubilation will dissipate when, as I predict, the cops are acquitted on most of those charges. But on the other side of the fence, the cops were telling me that they were getting wise guys in their face challenging them because they figured that with all of these feds and everybody looking over the shoulders of the Baltimore cops, that the cops would be more hesitant to arrest them because they didn't want to look as if they were, you know, being perpetrators of police brutality. I mean, it is a sad, sad state, man.
Oh, absolutely. It's happening. And Geraldo, I'll tell you right now, honestly, brother, wait till this summer in New York City.
Oh, man. I hope you're wrong, but that's what everybody's saying. Thanks, Ray. That's what everybody, 96% of those surveyed think it's going to be a rough summer in urban America. It's a tough one. The president has to get off his high horse. Lose the Ivy League button-down shirts. Get to work.
Live, local, on it. 866 Geraldo, where New York comes to talk. 77 WABC.
Day by day, you're making all my dreams come true. And come with me. I want you to know
I'm yours alone. And I'm in love.
As we go through the years,
we go through the years.
As we go through the years, day by day.
The late, great Benny King. He passed away on Friday. We were busy and in the field when I recognized Benny King, that last recording produced by Alan Schwartzberg, our friend who used to front the Goodnight America Band. On my old show, Marty and I did Good Night America on the ABC network. Benny King, see you later. All right, we're talking about a lot of very important things. I mean, not only the events in Baltimore, but the cop shot in the face, Officer Brian Moore in Queens Village, shot in the face, point blank range, another assassination attempt in a medically induced coma. We're also talking about the obnoxious Pamela Geller and the attack on her Prophet Muhammad cartoon. You know, I feel about Pamela Geller in this. It's like you could have a show about greasy Latinos. You could have like black Sambo shows. You could have like big-nosed Simon Legree Jewish shows, drunken Irish shows. Yeah, free speech, right? We need this like we need a hole in the head. We need Pamela Geller like we need, another winter. Like we just endured. It's just, she irks me. I can't tell you how,
You know what her? You know what it's similar to? I mean, I think you have to be offended
by... Hi, Sarah. Hold on one second. I'll be right with you.
You have to be offended by what she's doing if you're offended by that artist who in Soho put a cross in urine.
I'm totally disgusted.
Or the artist who took dung, elephant dung, and put it on a picture of the Virgin Mary.
Absolutely.
If you're offended by those two things, then you have to be offended by what Pamela Geller is doing because it's the exact same thing.
It isn't exactly the same thing because one is designed to make you puke... And the other is designed to make your head blow off. There's a difference. One is designed to provoke disgust. The other is designed to provoke violence. There's a difference. That's where there's a crime, inciting to violence. Come on, gang, let's attack. That's what she's saying. Come on, let's, you attack. What do you think they had those gunmen, the Texas Rangers, surrounding the party in Garland, Texas, when Geller had the show? It was like entrapment. She was trying to provoke that response, and you can't mess with Texas. You crazy? After Fort Hood, they were ready, willing, and able to take out those two jihadis who got exactly what they wanted. They wanted a trip to Valhalla or whatever the hell they go, and they got it. They're dead. They're dead, and now she has a talking point. It is, I can't tell you. Okay, hi, Sarah. Thank you for calling.
Hi. First of all, welcome back.
Thank you.
And please stop going to all these dangerous places because we need you. But about this issue, when the Charlie Hebdo people were attacked for their cartoon, it didn't occur to me to compare them to Nazis. So I think that you may be allowing your feelings about Geller to affect the way you are characterizing the fact that this was a gathering with cartoons. So I understand that you are offended by this. But
Let me ask you this, Sarah. I remember you remember Meir Kahane, right? The activist rabbi.
Yes.
How would Meir Kahane have reacted if there was at the, the Brooklyn Botanical Garden, say, a show on all the anti-Jewish stereotypes? What would Meir Kahane have done if there was, you know, and I don't have to go. Everybody can, in their own mind, picture every hateful thing, every hateful cartoon, just pull out all the Nazi art, all the rest of it. How would he have responded to that? I mean, isn't it almost predictable that you can provoke a response, that you can provoke a reaction?
Well, forget...
And isn't there some responsibility involved?
May I just say, to Noam Leiden's point about the offensiveness to Christians, the fact that Christians are not going to bring guns and try to kill the artist does not mean that you cannot do a cartoon about something relating to Muslims. Not if you want to have the same standard for every religion.
All right, appreciate you are such a thoughtful person. You know, we need to have some tea together. I care for you, and I appreciate your call. Thank you, sir.
Stay safe.
Thank you, Charlie. You sound like my wife. Here's our buddy Stan in Forest Hills. What are you thinking about, buddy?
Hey, I'm glad you're back from Baltimore. But
thank you.
The thing
too.
That I've discovered, and I think I finally have come to the conclusion, I don't know if you have, maybe I want your analysis, that the Democrats have given on the silver platter to the Republicans the issue for 2016, and it's the Willie Horton all over again. It's the mayor next to a picture of Hillary, and it's going to say, can we allow these people to run our cities and our country? And the picture will show constantly with the mayor and the rioting and Hillary Clinton, and I think that will be the issue for 2016. Can Democrats control our cities and control the world? Can they help us? Can they solve it? It's going to be the issue.
It will be the issue, but here's the way, and excellent analysis there. Here's how the Republicans have to take advantage of it. Yes, I think that Stan's right. That's the marketing device. Democrats have failed. I mean, that's been like you saw Elijah Cummings, God bless him, he kept the peace there. He made people honor the curfew, particularly from Wednesday night on last week, a long-time congressman there. There's no doubt, though, that there have been Democratic administrations in Baltimore and in Detroit and in Cleveland straight through, right? So the way the Republicans tend to take advantage of it is to do my pragmatic idealism approach. What is that? So it is the 35,000 burned out derelict buildings. We give these to people. If you want to invest your sweat equity, we'll help finance your rebuilding of this community. We will give you ownership of these homes. You will invest, and we will hire you to do the nailing and the sawing, so the 40% unemployment is affected by this massive project. We forgive these tax loans. Nobody's going to ever pay them anyway. 60 grand. Who's going to pay 60 grand in a tax lien before then they buy the property? It's not going to happen. Nobody's ever going to pay off some other, you know, slumlord's tax bill from 30 years ago. Not going to happen. Forgive the tax lien. Get the sweat equity. You make the contract. Put them to work doing it. That's one thing. The other thing is, going back to what I said about rewarding good conduct, bribe people to do the right thing. I know Chris Rock says you're supposed to do that, but it doesn't matter that you're supposed to. So what does that mean? Your kid has perfect attendance. At the end of the month, you get $100. The kid does well on those standardized tests. You get $100. I don't know. You make up the number. The neighborhood is clean. Everybody gets something. I think you've got to use a Republican approach where we reward good conduct, just as we are in favor of punishing bad conduct and having zero tolerance for the lawbreakers, those who are doing the right thing, the husband who stays home. You've got to make it worthwhile for people. I know people say, "Ah, rather that's bribery." What are you going to do? You're going to throw you're going to make it a development zone again, the way they've done 1,000 times in the past. You're going to, yeah, we need rec centers, but you can't have a rec center with a 2-year funding. And then at the end of the 2-year, the rec center closes because the politicians can't agree to renew the funding for the rec center. These operations must be self-sustaining. They must span the generations. They must replace the failed welfare state that liberal Democrats have created over the decades. It hasn't worked. It doesn't work. Even keeping the peace is not enough. If keeping the peace means you have massive police presence that occupies the community and you thereby somehow mitigate some of the violence, Baltimore has 10 times the murder rate of New York. No economy but drugs on the West Side. You need a new approach, and Republicans can capitalize on it if they're smart and practical and result-oriented, and you run them like a business.
Live and local, the Tri-State's most important issues with Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Just got a couple of minutes here before the news break. Let me take Fred in Westbury. Hey, buddy. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, hi, Geraldo. I guess I'm a tad younger than you, and I've called you before.
Most people are.
I'm the best friend of your former stage manager, Mike.
You are a friend of Mike Jacobs? He's a great guy.
Yeah. And
does he still have that Volkswagen I gave him?
No, he does not.
We golf together every year at the event. But go ahead. I'm sorry, Fred. Go ahead.
Well, you know, I demonstrated and I walked in the 60s and everything, and I still consider myself a liberal, but I find myself becoming so reactionary to what's happened with shootings. If the situation were reversed and Brian Moore had shot this thug, you would have had people.
So right you are. So right you are. Brilliant analysis. So right you are.
People as they come. And I saw the people on the
That's right. If just imagine, ladies and gentlemen, I only have 30 seconds, Fred. So you call me back if you haven't finished your point, but I think it's a brilliant point you made so far. Imagine what would the reaction have been if Demetrius Blackwell, even with his career criminal record, if he had been shot and killed by the cop, by Brian Moore,
or shot in the face by the cop, by Brian Moore. Imagine the different reaction. Isn't that chilling how the world is on its head some ways? Fred's so right about that one. Just imagine how different it would be.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Very smoothly. And about 10 minutes to 7, a dark-colored vehicle pulled up to the west entrance parking lot. There was a police officer, a police car there blocking that entrance. A police officer in it along with a GISD security officer. When that car pulled up and stopped, those officers began to exit their vehicle, and two men exited the dark-colored sedan. Both of them had assault rifles, came around the back of the car, and started shooting at the police car. The police officer in that car began returning fire and struck both men, taking them down. At the same time that was starting, we could actually hear gunfire around the parking lot. We had a SWAT REACT team in the back that very quickly responded within seconds and helped secure the scene.
This is from Garland, Texas.
They're on the street next to their car.
Joe Horn is a officer spokesman. Talking about how they were more than ready for those two jihadis who tried to attack Pam Geller's obnoxious Muslim cartoon show. The SWAT team responded within seconds, and both the jihadis, both the extremists, the sympathizers of ISIS in Garland, Texas, who were attempting to attack that cartoon show, carrying both of them assault weapons, firing at cops, cops returning fire and killing both of them. They got their just desserts. They got what they wanted. Martyrdom. They died on that street next to their car. Pam Geller got what she wanted also. It is troubling that ISIS lives amongst us. I think that we can't bury the lead there. The fact that these two men were motivated to try to perpetrate deadly violence to attack the cartoon show. Also deeply troubling, less so, but still deeply troubling, that the intolerance of these provocateurs and their promulgation of this hatred. Just like the Nazis marching through the Jewish town of Skokie, Illinois back in the 1990s. She makes me sick, Pam Geller. Not quite as sick as the jihadis, and I'm glad they're, you know, you eye for an eye, you try to kill me, I'm going to kill you. That's just the way it goes in the Old Testament and in the New World. What are you thinking about? 866 Geraldo, 77 WABC is the station. I'm Geraldo, and I want to hear from you in Oceanside. It's Ian. What's up, Ian?
First, I'd like to say something about Pam, but I'd like to say about the cop, you know, what a shame. And just that these guys, just without them, was stuck. And then just thinking a rationale of a person like Hillary is somebody saying that a cop should not have guns when you know that every drug dealer then every.
Did Hillary ever say that? The cops should not have guns?
I could have sworn that. I don't know if she said it. I thought I heard somebody say that. But I did hear that these Democrats along the lines the last couple of days. I don't know. Maybe Hillary didn't, and I'll retract that. But I have heard that type of onus where people are just saying that
that's ridiculous.
Cops shouldn't have guns and this.
I remember when the cops around here just had the little 38s, like my old snub-nosed 38. They were up against that was during the days of the Miami Vice days when the drug dealers all had Uzis. And the cops had little pop guns.
In some neighborhoods, I could say maybe you don't. Maybe there's no need for a gun on the hip, but nobody would want to be a cop. I wouldn't want my kid to be a cop, knowing that all the people that hate cops and in a heartbeat would shoot him dead if he couldn't defend himself against a criminal. You know, this guy just got shot in the face, and he had a gun on him, and he couldn't react in time to get his weapon drew. So Is that what you want? You want no cops on your street?
Not me, man. I want Officer Krumke. I want him walking. I want my kids to know who he is.
To say all the good people always pull for the cops, you know? There's always going to be an element, especially in an urban sprawl where there's 10 times the amount of people, and then you got the 50 cents.
You know, I don't know if you were listening before, Ian, but it was very, and I appreciate the call, Alexa. So, Fred, Mike Jacobs' friend, just going back to New York, and there's so much to talk about today, and I'm sorry, I haven't even gotten to that. Give me one divergence
sure.
here. You have, what's his name, Dean Skelos, the Republican head of the New York State Senate. He just surrendered to the FBI. So you have the Republican head of the state Senate surrendering to the FBI. Remember, you already had the Democrat Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver. He surrendered to the feds. You have Bridgegate today. You have Bridget Ann Quinn surrendering to the feds today. Yeah, what kind of people are leading us? I mean, that's the Republican state Senate leader, the Democrat Assembly Speaker, the key aide to the governor of New Jersey. I mean, it makes you sick. But the other thing, what I was saying about Fred and my buddy's buddy, if in Queens the situation had been reversed and the officer, Brian Moore, had shot the career criminal Demetrius Blackwell in the face, just imagine what the reaction would have been from the community and from the activists and from the Occupy Wall Street folks who are all over my case now. Imagine. Can you imagine? Another black man shot by a white cop. Imagine. And now, conversely, where is the protest from those people about this officer being shot? Where's the civil rights? I mean, doesn't Officer Brian Moore have civil rights also? He's shot in the face by a scumbag who just did 5 years on an attempted murder rap. Point blank range. The cop's in a medically induced coma, we think. At least he was this morning. So I talked to those three cops. I mean, getting coffee today. It was just, they're shell-shocked.
You know, I have a, I don't want to detail exactly who this is, but I have a friend whose husband is a NYPD cop who got hurt in the line of duty. I mean, not shot or anything, but broke his leg and is not on the beat right now. He's, you know, in bed. And she said, I can't tell you how thrilled I am that it happened to him, because she feels like such an awful time to be an NYPD cop. She's always worried every day when she goes out, but she said, now I would be extra worried with everything going on.
So she's glad that he's laid up?
Yeah.
Isn't that awful? And I tell you, I talked to those cops in Cleveland. The same people are not obeying them now. What are you going to do to me?
Well, I thought when those officers rolled into the streets of Baltimore after the announcement of those charges against the six officers, and then you saw this parade of officers take to the streets, I was like, those are brave. I don't know. I want to use an adjective that I can't use on the air, but they're the bravest of the brave because they have to stand out there as their...
You could probably use it.
No, I really couldn't. He'd beat me out. But so brave that they have to take to the streets where these guys, you know, with everything, this big announcement. I mean, I don't know. Just it felt like such an awful moment for them.
Well, here's some good news, at least. The United States Supreme Court has just rejected an appeal from a convicted murderer in Massachusetts who had been seeking taxpayer-funded sex reassignment surgery in prison.
Well, that's good. So we don't have to pay for it, in other words.
We pay for almost everything.
Just not that.
Almost everything. And so poorly is our money spent. I thought about this, and I don't know if you're listening now. It was a caller in New Jersey. I forget his name. Maybe Marty will remember. Who said, a homeowner frustrated by his property taxes in New Jersey, as I am, you know, with my properties in New Jersey and that tax bill. And New Jersey has the highest flight of any, you know, more people are leaving New Jersey as compared to people moving into New Jersey than any state in the union. And then when you think about how much money you pay, that taxpayers pay, you think about, you know, the relatively affluent communities like, I mean, Alpine and Teaneck and Tenafly and Edgewater and Montclair and
you know, go on and on and on and on, your community. And then you think about where Trenton and Camden and Newark, you know, where is the money spent? And how often these municipal officials get indicted for corruption. You know, so the money that you sweat to get, that's supposed to go to even the score, and instead it goes to lining the pockets, spent so inefficiently. See, I'm telling you, the Republicans can seize the issue of this unrest and the racial divide, but they have to do it in a way that's not tisk tisk. It's got to be practical, optimistic, and positive. This is what I could do with your $1,000 property tax. I can use it to pay kids to go to school, to get A's, for dads to stay home. I can, that derelict house, I'll give it to you. You build it, sweat equity, use practical solutions to bring about an idealistic result that you covet, because it is clear. It is clear that the entitlement, victimization philosophy is not working to help anybody's life get better. And but I will say this, you know, Clinton is getting a lot of heat now. Bubba, Bill Clinton getting a lot of heat because in 1994 he encouraged, you know, remember Sister Soldier and all that?
Yeah.
He, you know, reformed welfare, got a lot of people off welfare. But he did a lot of it by increasing police forces. I mean, he really gave birth to stop and frisk. I mean, Rudy was the mayor, but I mean, it was Bill Clinton's idea, and they funded a lot of prisons and so forth, and 1.5 million young black men are in jail as a result. I mean, that's crazy. It's crazy. But poverty rates have declined since then. I mean, there are stubborn pockets like West Baltimore, like Detroit, like East Cleveland, but poverty has declined, and violence has also dramatically reduced. Now you've got to get away to keep the peace, but bring those men home to take care of their families, to improve their lot in life, to get the sweat equity, give them something to work for, to change, and to protect the next generation. Otherwise, I mean, Baltimore is stuck. It is a town stuck in the day after the Martin Luther King riots of April 1968. It's stuck.
New York's biggest issues right now. This is Geraldo, 77 WABC.
26 minutes after 11 o'clock, we are seeing that the Texas gunman was an ISIS sympathizer. They have the one who was shot dead, the jihadi, who was seeking to attack Pamela Geller's obnoxious Prophet Muhammad cartoon show, lampooning the prophet. The SWAT team was ready, but the cop who actually shot down the extremists was a traffic cop. He shot them both, same cop. We'll continue to track that. So what are you thinking about? Busy, busy day. Stan in Staten Island. What's up, buddy?
Yes, hi, Geraldo. There's one name that never has come up in the last several weeks with the shootings and demonstrations in Ferguson, what happened in Baltimore, the police shootings in New York City, and that is the failure of Barack Obama as president for the last 7 years. None of the Sunday shows covered it at all. What say you?
I think that there are two things. I think a lot. There's two things I want to say. I think that the president did an abysmal job in terms of dealing with the Muslim world in general. And I think that he helped give birth to the anarchy that, and I think that is his biggest failing on the international front. On the domestic front, I think he's not done nearly enough to deal with the biggest and most egregious domestic issue, which is race relations. And why he seems hesitant to take it on in a major way, I think that psychologists will have to figure out, or historians, because he had a historic, and still has, he has 1/8 of his presidency remaining. He could start at least a conversation. And it seems that whenever he gets involved, he has a kind of a clumsy way of doing it. Like when he said if he had a son, he would look like Trayvon Martin. God bless. I love the sentiment there.
But, you know, what about other sons and other daughters? And it just, remember the Gates, the Professor Gates, Henry Gates in Cambridge, he kind of jumped all over that one and stumbled. And he just doesn't seem comfortable doing it. He doesn't seem comfortable. He made that one statement about kids have to pick up their pants and get more mainstream because they're not going to grow up to be Lil Wayne. But, I mean, that could have been a theme. He could have really developed that. He could have run with that. Because I do think that race relations are abysmal. I mean, this is a scary... I mean, this thing, Noam, you saw this NBC Wall Street Journal poll I mentioned in the first hour. I mean, 96% of those surveyed said they expect the nation's racial problems to continue flaring in the next few months. A vast majority of Americans bracing for a long, hot summer of racial unrest. 6 in 10 blacks attribute the discord to people with longstanding frustrations about police mistreatment of African Americans that have not been addressed. But most whites, 58%, said the violence was caused by those using Gray's death. This is the Baltimore example. Freddie Gray's death as an excuse for looting. That's like people seeing the world night and day. That's a very dangerous perception. You know what it reminded me of more than anything? The treatment I'm getting, you know, kind of the cold shoulder by certainly the millennials and the Occupy people, but, you know, not an inconsiderable number of various black spokespeople. It reminds me of how they reacted to me after the O.J. Simpson verdict and the coverage of the case, the murder case, where I was, you know, beyond convinced that O.J. Simpson decapitated the mother of his children and her friend, Ronald Goldman. And I was extremely displeased by the jury that acquitted him. You know, and I got the reaction that I was like some kind of race turncoat. That it would be one thing if I was a white guy and I expressed those opinions that Simpson was guilty. But being a person of color, expressing those sentiments that Simpson got away with murder, I was some ways a race traitor. I mean, it's so sad to me that, it's like the same as when people say, when I talk about, I don't like Bibi Netanyahu's policies, they say that I'm a self-hating Jew or I'm anti-Semitic. It's such a cheap shot.
Sound of the City, Geraldo, where New York comes to talk. 77 WABC.
Minutes after 11 o'clock, I wanted to play some of the news we gathered there in Baltimore. Rakesh,
yeah, tell me when you got that.
All right, so you had these gunmen, these two ISIS gunmen. They had body armor on, armed with automatic weapons, attacking Pam Geller's obnoxious Muhammad cartoon show in Garland, Texas. So everyone got what they wanted. Pam Geller provoked the violence that she probably was dreaming about. And the two ISIS extremists got their one-way ticket to heaven as they went down martyrs to the cause. They found all their social media. You have it now, but all right, now put that aside now. All right, full stop. All right, I'm not talking about the Muslims. I'm talking about Baltimore and the real problems that exist in the inner core of many cities. Not this one nearly so much. Baltimore is way, way more egregious, the conditions there. 10 times the murder rate of New York. The unemployment rate approaches 40% in West Baltimore. I found two young ladies there that I spoke to who, you know, just were not, I mean, particularly remarkable in you know, the fact that they fit in with everybody else. They live there in the community. And they were so measured and so reasonable and so rational in their tone and so legitimate in their concerns and in their measured approach that I really wanted you to hear it. Here, there. Yes, no. We got it?
What is it that your family fears, that your brother fears, that your cousins fear, that other young black folks fear in this town?
I think most importantly what everyone fears is the judgment. And right now, a lot of people in America are looking at, you know, young black women or men, everyone in this community, as problems. And I don't see them as problems. I see them as products of a broken environment. And I think we've been asking for years, decades, you know, for help. and we haven't gotten it. So it's sad that it's taken, you know, for all of this to happen, for people to realize, like, what it is that we really need to work on within the Black community, within the, you know, the whole system, the whole city.
One of them was 20 years old, the other one 21. They were so wonderful and so reasonable. And they didn't even get to college. What'd you say, Marty? All right, now here is the economy, the basic economy in West Baltimore, as I've said. Drugs. That's it. That's the employer there. And the Bloods and the Crips are like the franchises, like McDonald's and Burger King. The Bloods and the Crips. And they came together to help quell the violence. Why? Because the violence was bringing too many cops into the neighborhood and affecting their drug business. So here's my interview with the Bloods and the Crips.
These fellows are with the Bloods and Crips in the Paru. These are a street gang, alleged, as you know, drug dealers, but they have not participated, as far as I know, in the looting, have you?
No, sir.
Okay, so now why are you out here tonight?
We actually out here to tell everybody go home. Like, there's no need for you to be out here. We out here to tell y'all, like, man, everything, y'all saying everything is against the police. Stop burning down your community, you know, like, it's not against the community. It's against the police. It's about justice.
All right, so that's the Bloods and the Crips. And here is the star of the show. Here is Cheryl.
Let me just say this about the criticism of the police officers. Yes, if whatever they did, if they did anything criminal, then yes, please prosecute them. But please do not paint all police officers with a broad brush. I have a 22-year-old son. He has lived, he's in college now, but he lived in most of his life in New York, between Manhattan and Brooklyn. He has never been stopped once by a police officer in New York City. Never been arrested, never been frisked, never been thrown against a wall, nothing. And I think it's because of the manner in which I and his father taught him to conduct himself in public. I'm sorry, but the world receives you in the manner in which you present yourself. If you want to be respected as a young man, present yourself to the world like a young man. If you want to be thought of as a thug, present yourself that way, and that's how the world is going to receive you.
I thought that she was brilliant in that analysis. I mean, wouldn't it be nice to hear the president say, or the first lady say, just what she just said, that mom. I mean, I thought she was wonderful. But what do you think? 43 minutes after you listened to 77 WABC, Geraldo here along with Noam Layden on the fourth day of May. So let's start with Wayne in, where's that, Hurley? Where's that, Wayne?
Hurley is about 90 miles north of New York City.
Okay, buddy, you're on the air. What's up?
Well, thank you, Geraldo. It's a pleasure to speak with you. First off, I'd like to say you present the news in the best way possible.
How's that?
Well, the way you think like I think.
Okay, all right, we got that clear. So what's on your mind, buddy? I appreciate the compliment.
Okay. I was impressed, highly impressed, when you were first introduced to ABC, when I listened to Imus in the morning, every morning, and Bernie said, he said, it was genius.
Okay, genius. Wait. But let's get to some of these topics, though. Enough about me.
Forget. Okay. Well, my thought was your courage in going into these. You've been through so much stuff, and you're older than I am by 10 years. And you go into these events, you know, that are life threatening, and then present them.
You know, it's a funny thing. I appreciate that, Wayne. I appreciate the comment. You know what? I was trying to analyze myself the other day. Not the other. Well, you know, all this has been, you don't live through these passionate moments without having some effect.
Sure.
So I was just thinking, what am I other than an aging alpha male seeking an honorable death?
Oh. I mean, is that what you're going for?
I don't know. I was trying to analyze myself.
Right.
Why else? You know, what am I, you know, you're so far out there sometimes. You got your chin so far out.
And this in Baltimore, you had all the other journalists cowering behind you as you went and faced off against these guys, right? I mean, I'm not wrong about that, right?
No, at least I didn't get involved. I didn't get accused of inciting.
Oh, I just thought it was funny. I saw these journalists that had their microphones as they were leaning over the police line to interview people because they wanted to be on the right, on the side protected. And there you are, right in the middle of it all.
Well,
so
carrying the microphone for 77 WABC, and we shall return after this.
From New York, for New York, live, local, on it. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
I have to take Akiva's been holding on for too long. Thanks for your patience, Akiva. What's up?
Not much, Raleigh. I just want to make one point. You know, you're busy attacking Pamela Geller and saying that she provoked the incident that happened.
I can't stand Pamela Geller.
Saying that, fine, but here's my point. These guys don't need any reason to provoke.
No, that's true.
Look what happened in Paris, the Jews in that supermarket. You tell me what provoke it.
You're right.
And, I mean, this is just one example. So, I mean, maybe in this case, you know, they looked at it as an outlet to attack. But the point being is very simple. This is bigger than Pamela Geller. These people want to influence us with their way of living and their lifestyle, and we do not have to give in to these type of people.
I agree, but I think I agree. Nothing you said is do I disagree with, Akiva. Excellent call, and thank you for your patience.
I appreciate it.
You know, so the fight of the century, right? Saturday night.
Oh, yeah.
Fight of the century. So Baltimore is blacked out, a curfew. So all those Baltimore businesses, they paid $35,000 each. Because that's what they charge.
Rights.
They estimate that the bars will make $100 per head on the clientele. So they charge the bars $35,000 each. Nobody could go out. Non-refundable. Imagine that.
Wow.
So that when they tally the cost of what happened in Baltimore, not just the destruction, but all those cops, all those helicopters, all that overtime, all those hotels, all those businesses, it's going to be huge, huge. So I couldn't watch the fight. In Baltimore, I had to go outside of Baltimore. So I ended up with Don Lemon and Joey Jackson from CNN.
Oh,
and we had a wonderful lady, Nike. She works with Kevin Lyles, the rapper guy. And they found us a party in suburban Maryland to go to. And it was so great. So it was, you know, and here are people saying that it was just a great setting. It's just like a wonderful, wonderful place. So what does Guns Gunsman think of the fight of the century?
Well,
he joins us.
Good morning, Geraldo. I think that you actually probably had more blows yourself in Baltimore than that were landed from Pacquiao to Mayweather or vice versa. Fight of the century, yeah, right. I mean, you talk about a disappointment. The only good thing is I didn't spend $100 on it. I went to a bar. I paid the $15 for it. But, I mean, you talk about getting gypped. It's a Mayweather gyp of all things right there. And then Pacquiao's come out since saying, oh, he had hurt his shoulder in training earlier on. Yeah, right. I mean,
I thought Mayweather was a much better, stronger fighter. Pacquiao seemed to be over it. I mean, he just didn't seem to bring anything to that.
And even when he's walking down the aisle, he's got Jimmy Kimmel behind him. You know, he's walking to the ring with Jimmy Kimmel. He's making a laugh out of it. He's taking selfies. Like, Pacquiao's taking selfies. You can't be doing that. You got to get in the zone. I mean, this is a
what's
real
that line
deal.
That Burgess Meredith line? You can't lose the crazy when you're a fighter.
In Rocky.
Yeah, in Rocky.
I don't remember.
You remember that line? You got to be crazy. You can't. Oh, marriage is too civilized, something like that.
The best thing that could possibly have happened is, so the split was 60-40. Mayweather's, you know, guaranteed he's going to get like 180 million plus. You know, they're breaking it down.
Imagine
now.
That.
But if it was really going to be a real fight, you want to see something, do it 100% or nothing. Then you'd see them really fight.
Interesting. Winner
split.
Take all, Winner says take Guns, all. Guns, Guns.
Then you will see them fight.
For 180 million, I would stand toe-to-toe with Mayweather.
Right. To the death, right? Yeah.
To the death. Yeah. With the need to. Guns, Guns, no, I'm late. Thank you. Thank you, folks, for listening. See you right here tomorrow.